Then Jesus went out and made his way, as he customarily did, to a place called Gethsemane, across the Kidron Valley. There was an orchard there, and he and his disciples went into it. When he came to the place, he said to them, "Sit here and pray that you will not fall into temptation, while I go over there and pray." And he took with him Peter, James, and John, the two sons of Zebedee, and became anguished and distressed. Then he said to them, "My soul is deeply grieved, even to the point of death. Remain here and stay awake with me." Going a little farther, about a stone's throw, he threw himself down with his face to the ground and prayed that if it were possible, the hour would pass from him. He said, "Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. If you are willing, take this cup away from me. Not my will, but yours be done." Then an angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. And in his anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. When he got up from prayer, he came to the disciples and found them sleeping, exhausted from grief. He said to Peter, "Simon, why are you sleeping? Couldn't you stay awake with me for 1 hour? Get up, stay awake, and pray that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." He went away a second time and prayed the same thing. "My Father, if this cup cannot be taken away unless I drink it, your will must be done." When he came again, he found them sleeping. They could not keep their eyes open, and they did not know what to tell him. So leaving them again, he went away and prayed for the third time, saying the same thing once more. Then he came to the disciples a third time and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Enough. Look, the hour is approaching, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let us go. Look, my betrayer is approaching." While Jesus was still speaking, suddenly a crowd appeared, and the man named Judas, one of the 12, was leading them. Now Judas, the one who betrayed him, knew the place too, because Jesus had met there many times with his disciples. So Judas obtained a squad of soldiers and some officers sent by the chief priests, Pharisees, and experts in the law, along with the elders of the people. They came to the orchard with lanterns and torches and armed with swords and clubs. Now the betrayer had given them a sign saying, "The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him and lead him away under guard." When Judas arrived, he went up to Jesus immediately and said, "Greetings, Rabbi," and kissed him. But Jesus said to him, "Judas, would you betray the Son of Man with a kiss?" Then Jesus, because he knew everything that was going to happen to him, came and asked them, "Who are you looking for?" They replied, "Jesus, the Nazarene." He told them, "I am he." Now Judas, the one who betrayed him, was standing there with them. So when Jesus said to them, "I am he," they retreated and fell to the ground. Then Jesus asked them again, "Who are you looking for?" And they said, "Jesus, the Nazarene." Jesus replied, "I told you that I am he. If you are looking for me, let these men go." He said this to fulfill the word he had spoken, "I have not a single one of those whom you gave me." Jesus said to Judas, "Friend, do what you are here to do." Then they came and took hold of Jesus and arrested him. When those who were around him saw what was about to happen, they said, "Lord, should we use our swords?" Then Simon Peter, who had a sword, pulled it out and struck the high priest's slave, cutting off his right ear. But Jesus said, "Enough of this," and he touched the man's ear and healed him. Then Jesus said to Peter, "Put your sword back in its sheath, for all who take hold of the sword will die by the sword. Or do you think that I cannot call my Father, and that he would send me more than 12 legions of angels right now? How then would the scriptures that say it must happen this way be fulfilled? Am I not to drink the cup that the Father has given me?" And at the moment, Jesus said to the crowd, the chief priests, the officers of the temple guard, and the elders who had come out to get him, "Have you come out with swords and clubs to arrest me like you would an outlaw? Day after day I was with you, teaching in the temple courts, yet you did not arrest me. But this has happened so that the scriptures of the prophets would be fulfilled. This is your hour, and that of the power of darkness." Then the squad of soldiers with their commanding officer and the officers of the Jewish leaders arrested Jesus and tied him up. Then all the disciples left him and fled. A young man was following him, wearing only a linen cloth. They tried to arrest him, but he ran off naked, leaving his linen cloth behind. They brought Jesus first to Annas, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. Now it was Caiaphas who had advised the Jewish leaders that it was to their advantage that one man die for the people. Simon Peter and another disciple followed. Now the other disciples were acquainted with the high priest, and he went with Jesus into the high priest's courtyard. But Simon Peter was left standing outside by the door. So the other disciple, who was acquainted with the high priest, came out and spoke to the slave girl who watched the door and brought Peter inside. The girl who was the doorkeeper said to Peter, "You're one of those, one of this man's disciples too, aren't you?" He replied, "I am not." The high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and about his teaching. Jesus replied, "I have spoken publicly to the world. I always taught in the synagogues and the temple courts where all the Jewish people assembled together. I have said nothing in secret. Why do you ask me? Ask those who heard what I said. They know what I said." When Jesus had said this, one of the high priest's officers who stood nearby struck him on the face and said, "Is this the way you answer the high priest?" Jesus replied, "If I have said something wrong, confirm what is wrong. But if I have spoke correctly, why strike me?" Then Annas sent Jesus, still tied up, to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now the ones who had arrested Jesus led him to Caiaphas, the high priest, in whose house all the chief priests and elders and experts in the law had come together. And Peter had followed him from a distance all the way to the high priest's courtyard. After going in, Peter sat down with the guards, warming himself by the fire, waiting to see the outcome. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for evidence against Jesus so that they could put him to death, but they did not find anything. Many gave false testimony against him, but their testimony did not agree. Finally, one came forward, stood up, and gave this false testimony against Jesus. "We heard this man say, 'I will destroy this temple of God made with hands, and in 3 days build another not made with hands.'" Yet even on this point, their testimony did not agree. Then the high priest stood up before them and asked Jesus, "Have you no answer? What is this that they are testifying against you?" But Jesus was silent and did not answer. Meanwhile, Simon Peter was standing in the courtyard, warming himself. They said to him, "You aren't one of these disciples too, are you?" Peter denied it. "I am not." While Peter was below in the courtyard, one of the high priest's slave girls came by. Seeing Peter as he sat in the firelight, warming himself, she stared at him and said, "This man was with him too. You also were with that Nazarene Jesus of Galilee." But Peter denied it in front of them all. "I don't know what you're talking about, woman. I don't know him." Then he went out to the gateway, and a rooster crowed. Again, the high priest questioned Jesus and said to him, "I charge you, under oath by the living God, tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God, the Blessed One." Jesus said to him, "You have said it yourself. I am. But I tell you, from now on, you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power of God and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his clothes and declared, "He has blasphemed. Why do we still need further witnesses? Now you have heard the blasphemy. What is your verdict?" They all condemned him and answered, "He is guilty and deserves death." Now the men who were holding Jesus under guard began to mock him and beat him. Some began to spit on him, and to blindfold him, and to strike him with their fists. And some slapped him, saying repeatedly, "Prophesy for us, you Christ, who hit you?" They also said many other things against him, reviling him. When day came, the council of the elders of the people, the whole Sanhedrin, gathered together, both the chief priests and the experts of the law. Then they led Jesus away to their council and said, "If you are the Christ, tell us." But he said to them, "If I tell you, you will not believe. And if I ask you, you will not answer. But from now on, the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the power of God." So they all said, "Are you the Son of God then?" He answered them, "You say that I am." Then they said, "We have heard it ourselves from his own lips." Then all the chief priests and the elders of the people plotted against Jesus to execute him. After forming a plan, the whole group of them rose up, tied Jesus up, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate the governor. When they brought Jesus from Caiaphas to the Roman governor's residence, it was very early morning. They did not go into the governor's residence, so they would not be ceremonially defiled, but could eat the Passover meal. So Pilate came outside to them, where Jesus stood before the governor, and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They replied, "If this man were not a criminal, we would not have handed him over to you." Pilate told them, "Take him yourselves and pass judgment on him according to your own law." The Jewish leaders replied, "We cannot legally put anyone to death." This happened to fulfill the word Jesus had spoken when he indicated what kind of death he was going to die. Then the chief priests and the elders began to accuse Jesus repeatedly, saying, "We found this man subverting our nation, forbidding us to pay the tribute tax to Caesar, and claiming that he himself is Christ, a king." But Jesus did not respond. Then Pilate said to Jesus, "Don't you hear how many charges they are bringing against you? Have you nothing to say?" But Jesus made no further reply, not answering even one accusation, so that Pilate the governor was quite amazed. So Pilate went back into the governor's residence, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus replied, "You say so. Are you saying this on your own initiative, or have others told you about me?" Pilate answered, "I am not a Jew, am I? Your own people and your chief priests handed you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus replied, "My kingdom is not from this world. If my kingdom were from this world, my servants would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the Jewish authorities. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here." Then Pilate said, "So you are a king?" Jesus replied, "You say that I am a king. For this reason I was born, and for this reason I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." Pilate asked, "What is truth?" When he had said this, he went back outside to the Jewish leaders, the chief priests, and the crowds, and announced, "I find no basis for an accusation against this man." But they persisted in saying, "He incites the people by teaching throughout all Judea. It started in Galilee and it ended up here." Now when Pilate heard this, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. When he had learned that he was from Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him over to Herod, who also happened to be in Jerusalem at that time. When Herod saw Jesus, he was very glad, for he had long desired to see him because he had heard about him and was hoping to see him perform some miraculous sign. So Herod questioned him at a considerable length. Jesus gave him no answer. The chief priests and the experts in the law were there, vehemently accusing him. Even Herod with his soldiers treated him with contempt and mocked him. And then dressing him in elegant clothes, Herod sent him back to Pilate. That very day, Herod and Pilate became friends with each other, for prior to this, they had been enemies. Then Pilate called together the chief priests, the rulers, and the people who came up, and began to ask Pilate to release a prisoner for them, as was his custom. During the feast, the governor was accustomed to release one prisoner to the crowd, whomever they requested. At that time, they had in custody a notorious prisoner named Jesus Barabbas, who had been thrown into prison with other rebels for an insurrection started in the city and for murder. Pilate said to them, "You brought me this man as one who was misleading the people. When I examined him before you, I did not find this man guilty of anything you accused him of doing. Neither did Herod, for he sent him back to us. Look, he has done nothing deserving death. It is your custom that I release one prisoner for you at the Passover. I would therefore have him flogged and release him." But the chief priests and the elders stirred up the crowd and persuaded them to ask for Barabbas to be released instead and to have Jesus killed. So they all shouted out together, "Take this man away! Release Barabbas for us!" Pilate addressed them once again because he wanted to release Jesus. For as he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent a message to him, "Have nothing to do with that innocent man. I have suffered greatly as a result of a dream about him today." Pilate said to them, "Whom do you want me to release for you, Jesus Barabbas, or Jesus who is called the Christ, the King of the Jews?" For he knew that the chief priests had handed him over because of envy. "Which of the two do you want me to release for you?" And they shouted back, "Not this man, but Barabbas." So Pilate spoke to them again, "Then what do you want me to do with this one you call the Christ, King of the Jews?" They all shouted back, "Crucify him," and kept on shouting, "Crucify! Crucify him!" A third time Pilate said to them, "Why? What wrong has he done? I have found him guilty of no crime deserving death. I would therefore flog him and release him." Then the governor's soldiers took Jesus into the palace and called together the whole cohort. They stripped him and flogged him severely. Then they put a purple cloak on him, and after braiding a crown of thorns, they put it on his head. They put a staff in his right hand, and kneeling down before him, they mocked him, paid homage to him, and saluted him. "Hail, King of the Jews!" They spat on him, and took the staff and struck him repeatedly on the head and face. Again, Pilate went out and said to the Jewish leaders, "Look, I am bringing him out to you so that you may know that I find no reason for an accusation against him." So Jesus came outside wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Look, here he is, the man." But when the chief priests and their officers saw him, they were insistent, demanding with loud shouts, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" And their shouts prevailed. When Pilate saw that he could do nothing, but that instead a riot was starting, he took some water, washed his hands before the crowd, and said, "I am innocent of this man's blood. You take care of it yourselves. You take him and crucify him. Certainly I find no reason for an accusation against him." The Jewish leaders and all the people replied, "We have a law, and according to our law, he ought to die because he claimed to be the Son of God. Let his blood be on us and our children." When Pilate heard what they said, he was more afraid than ever, and he went back into the governor's residence and said to Jesus, "Where do you come from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. So Pilate said, "Do you refuse to speak to me? Don't you know I have the authority to release you and to crucify you?" Jesus replied, "You would have no authority over me at all unless it was given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of greater sin." From this point on, Pilate tried to release him. But the Jewish leaders shouted out, "If you release this man, you are no friend of Caesar. Everyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." When Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus outside and sat down on the judgment seat in the place called the stone pavement. Pilate said to the Jewish leaders, "Look, here is your king." Then they shouted out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate asked, "Shall I crucify your king?" The high priest replied, "We have no king except Caesar." Because he wanted to satisfy the crowd, Pilate decided that the demand should be granted. He released Barabbas, the man they asked for, who had been thrown in prison for insurrection and murder, but he handed Jesus over to their will to be crucified. So they took Jesus, stripped him of the purple cloak, and put his own clothes back on him. Then they led him away to crucify him. So they took Jesus, carrying his own cross. As they led him away, the soldiers forced a passerby to carry his cross, Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country. He was the father of Alexander and Rufus. They placed the cross on his back and made him carry it behind Jesus. A great number of people followed him, and among them women who were mourning and wailing for him. But Jesus turned to them and said, "Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For this is certain, the days are coming when they will say, 'Blessed are the barren, the wombs that never bore children, and the breasts that never nursed.' Then they will begin to say to the mountains, 'Fall on us,' and the hills, 'Cover us.' For if such things are done when the wood is green, what will happen when it is dry?" Two other criminals were also led away to be executed with him. They came to a place called Golgotha and offered Jesus wine mixed with gall to drink, but after tasting it, he would not drink it. At 9 o'clock in the morning, they crucified him there along with two other criminals, one on his right and one on his left, with Jesus in the middle. But Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they are doing." Pilate also had a notice of the charge against him, written and fastened to the cross above his head, which read, "Jesus the Nazarene, the King of the Jews." Thus many of the Jewish residents of Jerusalem read this notice, because the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city, and the notice was written in Aramaic, Latin, and Greek. Then the chief priests of the Jews said to Pilate, "Do not write 'The King of the Jews,' but rather, 'This man said, I am King of the Jews.'" Pilate answered, "What I have written, I have written." Now when the soldiers crucified Jesus, they took his clothes and made 4 shares, one for each soldier, and the tunic remained. The tunic was seamless, woven from top to bottom as a single piece. So the soldiers said to one another, "Let's not tear it, but throw dice to see who will get it." This took place to fulfill the scriptures that say, "They divided my garments among them, and for my clothing they threw dice." So the soldiers did these things. and then sat down and kept guard over him there. The people also stood there watching. Those who passed by defamed Jesus, shaking their heads and saying, "Aha! You who can destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are God's son, come down from the cross." In the same way, even the chief priests, together with the experts in the law and elders, were mocking him among themselves. He saved others, but he cannot save himself. Let him save himself if he is the Christ of God, his chosen one. Let the Christ, the King of Israel, come down from the cross now, that we may see and believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God, if he wants to, deliver him now, because he said, "I am God's son." The soldiers also mocked Jesus, coming up and offering him sour wine and saying, "If you are the King of the Jews, save yourself." The robbers who were crucified with him also spoke abusively to him. One of the criminals was hanging there, railed at him, saying, "Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us." But the other rebuked him, saying, "Don't you fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation? And we rightly so, for we are getting what we deserve for what we did. But this man has done nothing wrong." Then he said to Jesus, "Jesus, remember me when you come in your kingdom." And Jesus said to him, "I tell you the truth, today you will be with me in paradise." Now standing beside Jesus' cross were his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. So when Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing there, he said to his mother, "Woman, look, here is your son." He then said to his disciple, "Look, here is your mother." From that very time, the disciple took her into his home. Now, when it was about noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m, because the sun's light faded. Around 3:00, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of the bystanders heard it, they said, "Listen, he's calling for Elijah." After this, Jesus, realizing that by this time everything was completed, said, in order to fulfill the scripture, "I am thirsty." A jar full of sour wine was there. So someone immediately ran, soaked a sponge with sour wine, put it on a hyssop stick, and lifted it to his mouth to drink. But the rest said, "Leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah will come to take him down and save him." When he had received the sour wine, Jesus cried out again, with a loud voice, "It is completed." Then Jesus bowed his head and, calling with a loud voice, said, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." And after he said this, he breathed his last and gave up his spirit. And when the centurion who stood in front of him saw how he died, he praised God and said, "Certainly, this man was innocent." Just then, the temple curtain was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook and the rocks were split apart and tombs were opened and the bodies of many saints who had died were raised. They came out of the tombs after his resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared to many people. Now when the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and what took place, they were extremely terrified and said, "Truly this one was God's son." And all the crowds that had assembled for this spectacle, when they saw what had taken place, returned home beating their breasts. All those who knew Jesus stood watching from a distance. Among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James the younger, and of Joseph and Salome, the mother of the sons of Zebedee. When Jesus was in Galilee, they had followed him and given him support. Many other women who had come up with him to Jerusalem were there too. Then because it was the day of preparation, so that the bodies should not stay on the crosses on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was an especially important one, the Jewish leaders asked Pilate to have the victims' legs broken and bodies taken down. So the soldiers came and broke the legs of the two men who had been crucified with Jesus, first the one and then the other. But when they came to Jesus and saw that he was already dead, they did not break his legs. But one of the soldiers pierced his side with a spear, and blood and water flowed out immediately. The person who saw it has testified, and his testimony is true, and he knows that he is telling the truth, so that you also may believe. For these things happened so that the scripture would be fulfilled, not a bone of his will be broken. And again, another scripture says, they will look on the one whom they have pierced. Now when it was evening, there came a rich man from the Judean town of Arimathea named Joseph, a good and righteous man who was also a disciple of Jesus, but secretly because he feared the Jewish leaders. He was a highly regarded member of the council, who was himself looking forward to the kingdom of God. Joseph went boldly to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Pilate was surprised that Jesus was already dead. He called the centurion and asked him if he had been dead for some time. When Pilate was informed by the centurion, he gave the body to Joseph. After Joseph bought a linen cloth, he took down the body. Nicodemus, the man who had previously come to Jesus at night, accompanied Joseph, carrying a mixture of myrrh and aloes weighing about 75 pounds. Then they took Jesus' body and wrapped it with the aromatic spices and strips of linen cloth according to Jewish burial customs. Now at the place where Jesus was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden was Joseph's own new tomb that he cut in the rock, where no one had yet been buried. And so, because it was the Jewish day of preparation, that is, the day before the Sabbath, and the tomb was nearby, they placed Jesus' body there. Then they rolled a great stone across the entrance of the tomb and went away. The women who had accompanied Jesus from Galilee followed, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary, the mother of Jesus, sitting there opposite the tomb. They saw where the body was placed. Then they returned and prepared aromatic spices and perfumes. On the Sabbath, they rested according to the commandment. The next day, which is after the day of preparation, the chief priests and the Pharisees assembled before Pilate and said, "Sir, we remember that while the deceiver was still alive, he said, 'After 3 days I will rise again.' So give orders to secure the tomb until the third day. Otherwise, his disciples may come and steal his body and say to the people, 'He has been raised from the dead,' and the last deception will be worse than the first." Pilate said to them, "Take a guard of soldiers. Go and make it as secure as you can." So they went with the soldiers of the guard and made the tomb secure by sealing the stone. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Salome, bought aromatic spices so that they might go and anoint Jesus. While it was dark, very early on the first day of the week at sunrise, they went to look at the tomb, taking the aromatic spices they had prepared. They had been asking each other, "Who will roll away the stone for us from the entrance to the tomb?" Suddenly there was a severe earthquake, for an angel of the Lord descending from heaven came and rolled away the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were shaken and became like dead men because they were so afraid of him. The women came to the tomb and, looking up, saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away from the entrance to the tomb. When they went in, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. Mary Magdalene went running to Simon Peter and the other disciple whom Jesus loved and told them, "They have taken the Lord from the tomb and we don't know where they have put him." Meanwhile, the women remaining in the tomb were perplexed about this. Suddenly, two men stood beside them in dazzling attire, one a young man dressed in a white robe, sitting on the right side. The women were terribly frightened and bowed their faces to the ground. But the angel said to the woman, Women, do not be afraid. I know that you are looking for Jesus the Nazarene who was crucified, but why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here, for he has been raised, just as he said. Come and see the place where he was lying. Remember how he told you, while he was still in Galilee, that the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified and on the third day rise again?" Then the women remembered Jesus' words. The angel said to the women, "Go quickly and tell the disciples, even Peter, he has been raised from the dead. He is going ahead of you into Galilee. You will see him there, just as he told you. Listen, I have told you." So they left the tomb quickly with fear and great joy, for terror and bewilderment had seized them. And they said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. But Jesus met them, saying, "Greetings." They came to him, held on to his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Don't be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. They will see me there." When they returned from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the rest. Now it was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other woman with him, who told these things to the apostles. But these words seemed like pure nonsense to them, and they did not believe them. But Peter and the other disciple, John, set out to go to the tomb. The two were running together, but the other disciple ran faster than Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent down and saw the strips of linen cloth lying there, but he did not go in. Then Simon Peter, who had been following him, arrived and went right into the tomb. He saw only the strips of linen cloth lying there, and the face cloth, which had been around Jesus' head, not lined with the strips of linen cloth, but rolled up in a place by itself. Then the other disciple who had reached the tomb first came in and saw and believed. So the disciples went back to their homes, wondering what had happened. Mary went back and stood outside the tomb weeping. As she wept, she bent down and looked into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white sitting where Jesus' body had been lying, one at the head and one at the feet. They said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" Mary replied, "They have taken my Lord away, and I do not know where they have put him." When she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Who are you looking for?" Because she thought he was the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him, and I will take him." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus replied, "Do not touch me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father. Go to my brothers and tell them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene came and informed the disciples, "I have seen the Lord," and she told them what Jesus had said to her. Everybody awake. What a story. The truth. So many people try to, around this time of year, they try to discredit Easter. I mean, this is the most important holy day for Christians. They try to say that it was really a pagan celebration. In fact, in our paper just last Sunday, there was an article that appeared. They'd taken it from another paper, but it was basically the article was about the name of Easter, where it came from, and other things that you may not have known about Easter, other pagan influences and so forth. Easter has been celebrated since the very beginning. We're told in Acts that the new Christians met weekly, pray, fellowship, to attend themselves to the disciples' teaching and to break bread. They celebrated Easter, the resurrection, weekly together. Easter was a weekly celebration. And then it was only natural, of course, that the day itself would be commemorated. So it began to be celebrated by Christians all over the world. It's kind of interesting, because of the different ways that different cultures date things, the day was celebrated differently at different times. Even today, really, the Catholic and Orthodox, the Orthodox celebrated a different day than what we do. There's some claims around this time of year. I see a meme pop up on Facebook. Some of you may have seen it, saying that Easter is really a religious celebration to Ishtar. Anybody seen that one? I know you have, Blair. Probably seen it. But Ishtar was an Egyptian goddess, and they say that her symbols were the hare and eggs. In fact, I was reading a few years ago, even Richard Dawkins had put it up on his website, and it quickly came down because there's no basis behind it. The only reason why some people think that Ishtar and Easter are related is because the names sound similar. But there is no evidence whatsoever. This article in the paper said that the name Easter comes from a Germanic goddess named Oyster, and the only reference to this actually comes from a Catholic man who wrote that in the month that was named after this German goddess Oyster, that Easter was celebrated. And he didn't use the word Easter. He actually used the word Pesach, which is the Hebrew word. And that it was a month that where celebrations were held that were dedicated to this goddess Oyster, but they no longer celebrated those celebrations. And that's the only thing that he says. And this huge deal has been made out of Venerable Bede's words. And people claim that Easter comes from the Germanic pagan religion dedicated to Oyster. The problem is there's no evidence whatsoever outside of what Venerable Bede says. Nothing. The word oyster, O-E-S-T-E-R, not O-Y-S-T-E-R, the word oyster is a Germanic word that means to shine. We get the word east from it because what happens in the east? The sun rises. There's also some evidence that the word oyster is derived from a Germanic word that means to rise. The Germanic peoples and English are the only ones that actually use the word Easter, by the way. Most of the other cultures in the world uses some derivative of the word Pesach for Passover. There's no evidence whatsoever that Easter is derived from some pagan celebration. In some last-ditch effort, some people might say, well, look at the bunnies and the eggs associated with Easter. Those are fertility symbols. And it is true. They have been used as fertility symbols throughout history by different religions. And even if they are vestiges of paganism, I say, so what? Who cares? My kids participated in an egg hunt yesterday. Were they worshiping some pagan goddess as they were finding eggs? They have no idea the history behind that. They were just having fun. When they received their stuffed bunny, they were just having fun. What's interesting is that we have taken some of these symbols and we have turn them around. And today, especially in our American culture, the eggs and the bunnies, they don't really mean anything to us, but just the fun side of Easter. But the eggs themselves were used by Christians to symbolize new life. In the Catholic Church, during the Lent season, and I think it's still this way in the Orthodox Church, they weren't even allowed to eat eggs during the Lent season. And so there was I don't remember what the area of the Christian world was, but there was an area of the Christian world where they would actually bring colored eggs to church with them, red eggs, red symbolizing Jesus' blood. And when the final prayer had been given and the Lent season was over, they'd crack open the eggs there at church and eat them. And some people think that's where the whole coloring of the egg thing came from. The fact is some people make a big deal about the dating as well. Easter is always the first Sunday after the vernal equinox, the spring equinox. And pagans today, they celebrate the spring equinox. Funny thing about pagans today are they are just pagans have no idea. The pagans today have no idea how pagans of yesterday celebrated things. So they've been reinventing everything. They know. I even read a couple of pagans' websites that know the history behind Oyster, and they agree Easter is not from Oyster. And like I said, the only thing that's ever mentioned about her is from Venerable Bede, but yet they have, because they believe that she was one of the goddesses that was worshipped, they have taken her as one of their goddesses, and they've started building this whole identity around her. So they celebrate these goddesses, they celebrate during these equinoxes and solstices. And so some people will look, point out, in fact, that article out of Sunday's paper pointed at that and said, basically, he made this claim that all our major holidays, holy days, were celebrated around the changing of the seasons. I can only think of two out of all the holidays that we celebrate. Now, Christmas, you've got somewhat of an issue there. We don't think Jesus was born. We know that Jesus wasn't born December 25th, and we know that there were some reasons for the dating of Christmas and so forth. Christmas wasn't even celebrated in this country until the 1700s. But Easter itself, we know when Jesus died. It was in the Jewish month of Nisan. It was the 14th day. We know that. Nisan, the Jewish calendar revolves around it's based on a lunar cycle. The Gregorian calendar is based on a solar cycle. So at one point you had all these different groups celebrating Easter at different times, and finally the Roman Catholic Church got together and said we need to unify. We need to be unified in when we celebrate Easter, and so they chose that first Sunday after the vernal equinox, after the full moon. But that is a date that is in close proximity to the Passover. Because the Jewish calendar is a lunar calendar, it makes sense. So even the fact that we have this holiday that's around the vernal equinox doesn't point to it being pagan. It just happens to be close to the vernal equinox that pagans celebrate on. This is a uniquely Christian holiday. We celebrate it because this is the period where Jesus died on the cross. He was buried and he resurrected. That's why we celebrate this. We had a lot of fun yesterday at the picnic. And I admit, coming to church may not be as fun as hunting eggs and watching kids bounce in the bounce house. But this day is so much better than yesterday, because I get to focus on the fact that God loves me, He loves you, and He provided a way for us to be reconciled to Him through His Son, Jesus Christ. Now we celebrate it every Sunday. We're one of those churches where we celebrate it every Sunday, but we take this day and we form everything around the resurrection. I want to take some time. I want us to sing a few more songs, do a little more worship. We've got a few more than we usually do, and I can't think of any better way to continue celebrating what God has done for us. So if you would stand up, and let's continue in worship here. And